It's Saturday, March 25th, 2006. You're moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley Fryer, narrowcasting from Lubbock, Texas. Well, good evening, and welcome to a second published podcast from today, which is actually a recorded podcast from last week, this time from the Florida Educational Technology Conference. This short interview was conducted with a representative of Encyclopedia Britannica, and you may remember that back in December of 2005, Nature magazine published a somewhat controversial article about the Wikipedia compared to Encyclopedia Britannica, and I'll include a link to that original Nature article in the podcast show notes. In that article, the researchers asserted and provided evidence based on research that the Wikipedia was actually even more accurate than Encyclopedia Britannica when you consider the fact that it's over 10 times the size in terms of the number of articles and information that's contained in it. Well, coincidentally, and I did not know this, when I went to the Britannica booth at the FETC conference, Britannica released a formal press release in the last week about this Nature article. And I'll go ahead and include that in the podcast show notes. And basically, I would just challenge you to read the press release, take a listen to what the Britannica representative has to say in this podcast, and then let other people know what you think, either by commenting here or posting something on your own blog, and just getting into this discussion, because I think this is a great conversation for us to be having about the resources which we should be utilizing or not be utilizing, how we should be utilizing resources to get information in the 21st century. It was interesting that President George Bush actually used the word blog, reportedly for the first time, this past week, and I think that we're going to continue to hear more and more about the blogosphere as we move forward in time. And I agree with President Bush's statement in that press conference that he had this week that people should not settle for only one news source. People need to be seeking other sources of information and going through a process of validation when they try to determine what is true and what is not, what is opinion, what is slanted, what is biased, and that kind of thing. So I think we all have to recognize that we look through our own lenses and our unique lenses when we examine anything that's in the world and anything that's happening. Reporters and news agencies really are no different. There is an attempt at objectivity, but there's always more to the story. And so this is an engaging debate for us to be in, and I just appreciate the Britannica FETC representatives, I guess, being willing to just dialogue about this and talk about these issues, because clearly these are things that not just librarians are interested in, but folks who are involved in any way, shape, or form with education in the 21st century are interested or should be in these kind of topics.
Well, I'm here at FETC at the Encyclopedia Britannica booth, and Amber Cribben is here. And my question to her is, why would people want to use Britannica instead of Wikipedia? And she said this is a timely question.
It's an incredibly timely question, Wesley. We just recently released our sort of repute to the Nature organization about that study that they did, which in itself had some severe inaccuracies, and they sort of omitted the fact that the errors that they found in Wikipedia were factual, you know, invalid statements, whereas the errors, quote-unquote, that they found in the Britannica were merely differences of opinion, perhaps, you know, issues that are within the academic community that are still challenged from one position or the other, so not necessarily inaccurate data or information that you would find in the Wikipedia. The other side to the Wikipedia that nobody really likes to talk about is that, and it's a touchy issue, but is that a large portion of the content is fairly pornographic and actually quite lewd. Everything you heard in the fourth grade and didn't know what it meant, there's an article in the Wikipedia about it. And you can browse through and click through and find it just as easy as you can find the article about Abraham Lincoln.
So there's not a clean version of the Wikipedia?
There is not, no. And so leaving that open to a student is like leaving the entire web open to a student. And you know what happens when you Google for terms like sex. It's equivalent of what's going to happen on Wikipedia. So in terms of an academic product, it's just not safe, and it simply isn't a source that you could, trust your students to go to. And then, of course, we have the more classical defense, which is we are a 238-year-old company with a team of hundreds of editors that are regularly checking and fact-checking all of our articles, and it's what we've done and have been known for years, and have held up, court cases and international, defense, and people refer it time and time again to the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Right. So. Well, one of the other issues that people will bring up is the speed of updating. And
sure.
Like when there was the London bombings, or mm-hmm. a new Supreme Court justice is appointed, boom, it's there.
Right.
So does Britannica have the ability to provide updated content that's validated and checked in a similar way that the Wikipedia is?
We do, yeah. And on our main consumer site, Britannica.com, we have regular homepage features about timely issues like the avian flu and, all of the issues of terrorism that we're facing now. And the other thing to consider is that if you want news, you're going to your news outlets, your New York Times, your BBCs. We're not that, and we've never tried to be that. We are encyclopedia reference material.
Right.
So if we're going to do an article about the avian flu, yes, we're going to go through and study it and evaluate it and bring the best of the best researchers and advisors in the world to create those articles. And then you will have the most, factual representation of that topic. If you go to Wikipedia, you can find out what happened last week in, Cambodia, and because somebody copied and pasted it from a New York Times article, but
you could also go to the New York Times or whatever that source is.
Right.
So, well, the read-write web is really powerful. I mean, the ability for people to write content, contribute.
Yeah.
So, has there been any dialogue that you're aware of with Britannica as far as leveraging that or having some kind of a part of the website or something that allows people to contribute or comment or any kind of interactivity?
Yeah, it's an intriguing concept. And, open source has just gone miles in a very short period of time. So we're definitely very attracted to the idea of just using more collaboration in our efforts. And it's great. We get some of the greatest letters and input from our customers worldwide, people with, different backgrounds and who regularly come to us with new article ideas, sometimes, fully written articles. And again, it's just the process of how do we incorporate that information in a manner in which we can still retain the integrity of the Encyclopedia Britannica, but also introduce new concepts to people that maybe would not have otherwise had an outlet for that. And
right.
So, yeah, definitely.
So one of the responses as far as the size, and, Wikipedia is 10 times bigger and all this, is that, a lot of that is inappropriate content.
Right.
Would there be another part of that response to the size issue as far as people saying that that's a reason to use Wikipedia is you'll find, that minute scientific, new innovation or whatever that just may not have been researched and put in Britannica yet?
Yeah, again, I don't think we're the be-all and end-all of all things. And certainly, you can Google for something and find hundreds of resources on a variety of topics that we don't have in the encyclopedia. And that's the beauty of the web and it's the beauty of international collaboration. In terms of what content Wikipedia has that we don't, we don't see a lot of statistics from them. We don't know their article list versus our article list. So it's difficult to really compare the apples to apples in that way.
Well, let's talk about the actual costs and for school districts. Obviously, I think librarians very much resonate with your position, and they're ready to, let's stick with Britannica. Let's stick with traditional sources.
Yeah.
So what is a school or a school district or even a homeschooler that might be interested in Britannica,
mm-hmm.
what are they able to access for free and what do they have to pay for and how does that all
sure.
work commercially?
On the Britannica.com site, we have the full 25,000 articles from the Kinsight database are available for free. So, the majority of entries are in that database. The full 75,000 articles in the Encyclopedia Britannica are what are available for subscription. We do offer a 3-day free trial, so anybody can sign up and, email password and read the articles and see if it's worth it for them. The monthly subscription is only $9.95. The annual is $69.95. So.
And that's for a school or a classroom?
That's for an individual.
Oh, for an individual.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The school and classroom use varies depending on district and consortium.
Right. So if they're in a larger district, a larger consortium, they can get a better price.
Yeah, exactly.
So they get about 50,000 more articles than they could get for free when they're paying.
Definitely for the consumer. And then in the school market, we have our Britannica Online School Edition site, which actually comprises four encyclopedias. So the EB, the traditional adult EB, the concise that we just spoke about, and then also introducing the Compton Encyclopedia, which is a middle school, sort of middle school to high school level. That is about 27,000 articles. And then we have the Elementary Encyclopedia, which is about 2,000 articles. It's really written down to that younger sort of grade 2 through 5. So,
and does all that come together if you license it?
Mm-hmm. It's all together for the subscription price.
Okay. So. One more question that really kind of goes in a little bit different direction about sort of plagiarism and, you know, paraphrasing. I mean, that's always a big issue about doing research is what's your own words and plagiarism. Does Britannica have resources that teachers can utilize to kind of give guidelines for that kind of thing? I mean, when they're doing research. And that's just one of the big things with students, and, you know, what do you put in your own words? What do you quote?
Right.
Is there anything that you have on that?
We have, on the School Edition site, we do offer teachers resources and different learning materials. So there are guidelines about how to prepare a research paper and how to do an oral presentation and, you know, different topics like that. And then, you know, as a company, we provide some basic outline of what our copyright restrictions are and plagiarism. But I know that there are tools available online that teachers can use to sort of search whether or not the phrase that they're questioning
turn it in
is
and those
exactly
kinds of things.
Exactly. So we rely more on those types of services to really.
Is there any kind of Creative Commons licensing of any of the stuff that Britannica is doing as far as specifically allowing for not just fair use but commercial use or remixing, like, you know, taking pictures or taking any of the audio content or the multimedia content and kids, maybe, because if they do it for class, obviously that's different. They're limited to showing it in class.
Right.
But if the kid wants to do something on their own and then they want to put it on their MySpace site or whatever they're doing, it's very different from a copyright standpoint.
Different.
So what should they do in that sense as far as copyright guides, or what should teachers do when they're trying to talk to students about that? Is there any kind of...
Yeah, that's a very good question. As a company, of course, you know, we syndicate and license our content to other providers. So we do that effort more at a corporate level. For individual students who, you know, want to make an iMovie and then post it somewhere, it's very challenging for us to try and track those things down. And, you know, it's just sort of the honesty policy that we rely on now. But
right. Okay. Well, anything else you'd like educators? The podcast is just sort of teachers interested in 21st century learning. Is there anything else that you would want to say to that audience about Britannica or about schools' reasons to look at Britannica and not sort of pass it off as a 20th century thing, but as a very important 21st century resource?
Yeah. I can say that, you know, I think we all have a really general concern about education in this country and where it's going, and knowing that budgets and things are limited and people are trying to find the best resources that they can for the least amount of money still doesn't mean we should compromise our integrity, and especially at a time when, you know, our test scores might not be as high as they'd like to be, or our universities are not competing with other international universities at the same level. We really need to focus on finding the best resources for all levels of students, you know, K through 20. And to do that, you have to rely on names that you can trust and not the next big thing or the latest thing to hit the web, or because those things will fade and those things don't have the dedication to the content the way that we do.
Right.
So,
okay. Well, thanks a lot for agreeing to be interviewed.
Yeah.
That's cool.